It's time!
You're listening to Pound for Pound, ringside for all things MMA and boxing on WFUV Sports.
Welcome into another edition of Pound for Pound. I'm your host, Riley Lucas, and this week I am joined by Chris Carino and Andrew Craneri, as well as our producer, Colin Loughran. We are coming off of a very big UFC 290 weekend. We also have some exciting fight announcements, and we have the Holly Holm fight this weekend. So lots to talk about today. But before any of that, first, I want to ask you guys, how are you doing today?
I guess I'll go first. I mean, I can't be doing much better. UFC 290 is officially in the books. It was an awesome card. Some awesome events throughout the week, too. You know, the Hall of Fame induction, everything like that. It was super fun to watch. So it was a great weekend, and I can't wait to talk about it. And also be back on the pod, too. I felt like you guys did a great job last week, so I'm ready to, talk about some fights.
I will say, Andrew, I was a little sad that I wasn't able to debate with you last week, but I'm sure we'll just do that today.
I'm good. I saw Team Zuckerberg, Izzy and Volky getting in the gym, getting in the lab. It looks like a, you know, real force in the MMA world.
If what you ask a roster.
Personally, yeah. The weekend was great. The card obviously was great, full of some surprises and some not surprises. A mixed bag in that way, but definitely entertaining to say the least. Some great announcements for, in our area, maybe some greatest mixed martial artists to ever live, maybe performing around us, but we'll get all to all that later. I'm just excited for what's ahead, and I'm excited to look back on what a great week it was.
Yeah, I mean, obviously not all the fights went in my favor, but some did, which I will brag about that shortly. But overall, it was just very, very entertaining. And first off, I mean, let's get right into it. Jalen Turner versus Dan Hooker, a third round decision. What a fight that was. That was just, words cannot even describe. I mean, Hooker fought through a broken arm, and then in the end, he also had a fractured orbital, which I didn't even, think was possible. I really never even thought that could happen. So that was crazy to see. I mean, although it could have been closer, two judges did give the fight 29-28, with the one dissenting judge handing it to Turner 28-29. So overall, it was a really close fight. And I mean, Hooker's late rally and near submission, it made an impact. That's what I think really won him his fight. So I want to ask your guys' opinions on the decision that was made for this fight.
I think Dan Hooker 100% won this fight, which honestly was really surprising, because going into this, I felt like Jalen Turner was literally unstoppable. I felt like he had submission win after submission win, couple TKO finishes. He was really hot going near the, top of this lightweight division. And I felt like Dan Hooker was definitely on a downturn in his career, but wow, he really, really upset what I thought was going to happen in this fight, especially with what you were saying. I mean, a broken arm, broken orbital. We do see broken orbitals sometimes in MMA, but usually when they happen, the person's eye swells up really, really bad, like that happened in one fight in Cowboy's career. And that led to the fight being stopped. So I was so surprised that he actually fully broke his orbital and was still able to continue the fight and actually won the fight. So
the way he carried that was just I couldn't, I was shocked. I was shocked when even the broken arm too, the fact that he was able to win that fight with a broken arm and the broken orbital. I mean, that was just extremely impressive. Mm-hmm.
And it was a smart move too, going to the ground. I mean, obviously I feel like he was a couple steps behind on the feet. And I think that was just basically due to the physical difference. I felt like Jalen Turner was a lot faster to the punch.
Yes.
So it was really, really smart to bring it to the ground. And obviously he had the advantage there, almost getting the submission win. So really impressive for Dan Hooker. And I could see him doing some work at this lightweight division.
Yeah, I mean Jalen Turner too. He started off really well, so to see it end that way, that was, crazy to watch as well. But Chris, what did you think about this fight?
I kind of thought that a lot of people in the MMA world kind of thought that Dan Hooker was, a lamb to the slaughter in a lot of senses, and this one kind of walking into that octagon and just obviously kind of what you guys touched on, just dealing with those ailments and continuing to fight. It's just so much heart that he showed, especially when the MMA world wasn't necessarily in his corner to begin with or even thought he had a chance. So just a lot of grit, a lot of heart. Just definitely just a gutsy performance by him. And, a lot of people might have given up on him. And, he's trying to turn those naysayers into believers. And, he's doing a good job so far.
Yeah, I mean, I was one of those naysayers last week. I was definitely praising Jalen Turner. I thought he had this, and even when I first started watching the fight, and you see him landing this series of significant blows, as he, what did he do? He kicked Hooker and all that, and then instantly Hooker turned the tables, and I was just not expecting that from Dan Hooker. It really wasn't something I thought was going to happen, but good for Dan Hooker. I think he really needed this. And now I got to ask, where do these two guys go? For me personally, I think Dan Hooker versus Grant Dawson would be a great matchup. That's something I'd want to see. But I would like to hear what you guys think about that.
Yeah, so I actually had two matchups picked out, and actually you kind of mixed around one of my matchups. So what I was thinking is maybe Jalen Turner and Grant Dawson, since Grant Dawson's starting to get up the lightweight rankings. I feel like that would be a good match. They're also
Okay.
right next to each other on the rankings. And then for Dan Hooker, since he was such a big fight for him, I feel like people really took notice, and I feel like Chris said, people weren't really in his corner for this fight. I feel like a lot more are going to be watching him and in his corner for his next fight. And off the back of that, I think a fight against Rafael Fiziev could go awesome. I think that would be amazing because Rafael Fiziev, coming off a loss against Justin Gaethje, really technical striker, that's definitely in Dan Hooker's wheelhouse. So I think that could be a really exciting fight.
Yeah, no, I like to hear that. I didn't even think about that. I like it. I'm agreeing with you here on this one, Andrew. This is write it down in the book. This is crazy. I mean, I just personally think that Grant Dawson, his grappling could really proved tricky for Dan Hooker. I think also in retrospect too, I think the length and the striking power of Hooker would be difficult for Dawson. So that's something I would like to see. But I like your second thing right there you said. And now Chris, let's hear it. Who do you agree with here? Who do you want to see?
You guys have thrown up hats in the ring. I don't want to necessarily throw like prediction out there. I more just want to say that like in this division with the results of the weekend, it kind of throws both of them in confusing places when it kind of seemed like both of them would be in kind of like normal places in the division and kind of have natural progression with, if Jalen was to win here. But with a Dan Hooker win, it kind of throws a monkey wrench in both of their kind of journeys in the division, with it also being just so chaotic just at the top in general. So it's definitely going to be kind of an interesting place. I think someone with long striking could be interesting for Hooker, kind of how you guys were talking about it a little bit. I think that could be interesting, just if we're talking elements of what I would want to see and kind of an upcoming bout. But yeah, this division is just kind of just a circus in general. So it's just really confusing. And the Hooker win for Jalen and Dan just makes it extremely confusing for the both. And I don't envy the bookmaker whatsoever.
Yeah, I can second that for sure. I mean, I could talk about this for 10 more minutes, but I think we need to move on to what was my personal fight of the night. I was so happy to see this. We have Robert Whittaker, Dricus du Plessis. Finally, I am back. I was in a very bad slump of calling and picking fights, and I picked this one, and you don't understand the joy that was on my face. I wish you guys could have seen it. I was like jumping up and down because I am back in the game. My winning streak is coming back, I promise. And I mean, not only was this an amazing win for Dricus, he also won performance of the night. I was shocked, but in the best way possible. I thought he was going to win, but I didn't think he was going to go in a round two TKO. I mean, he managed to really shock the world, and he really solidified his title shot for later in the year. And I think we also see that Izzy saw that as well. He got in the ring, and I kind of want to talk about that aspect of it first, because that was the most shocking portion of this for me. And I also think it was disappointing because I felt like Izzy's tirade in the ring and the craziness that he spewed kind of took away from just the win that Drake has had here. So I didn't like it whatsoever. I mean, obviously, I know they get in the ring and banter, and I love that aspect of it. But I think what was said was a little wild. I think he was trying to get, Drake to say, you know what, back and get him canceled or get him hated. And I think all this did was hurt Izzy and hurt Israel Adesanya. And I feel like we're really watching his fall from grace here. And I saw someone on Twitter, they tweeted like, Izzy's falling from grace faster than a rock out of an airplane. And I really just like, was like, okay, I kind of agree. I've never been an Izzy fan. I made that very clear on the first episode of Pound for Pound, not to rewind that far back, but that was back, we started when he was going up against Alex Pereira. So I made it very clear I'm not an Izzy fan. I'm still not. And this just solidified why I'm not. So what did you guys, what was your initial reactions when you heard that?
I don't know if Chris wants to go first here because I'm still thinking about it, to be honest. I'll go first.
I just think a lot of those things that Riley is saying about Izzy, as an Izzy fan, it was nice to see Whitaker hit the mat as always. But I like, it's just, these are all the kind of things I heard about Izzy when he lost to Pereira, that he was on his downslide, the career was over, the, you know, flash in the pan, the lightning in the bottle, it's all kind of going away. Yeah. And then he wins back the title a couple months ago. And now he's on a downslide. I don't, that doesn't make sense to me. He just won the title back. I think arguably he might be the hottest he is in his career right now. I think he's just asserting his dominance on his division and is just getting in that ring. And I think he was almost prepared for Whitaker to win. And that's maybe why he was more amped up than it maybe gave for the situation. Cause if it was Whitaker, that amount of amped up would have matched and it would have made sense. So maybe that was why, but also I fully understand it. He's asserting the dominance. He is the King Alpha. He's everything in that division. He is untouchable to me, especially with the only guy I really think could beat him is no longer even in the division anymore. And I think it's just, I think calling this kind of the, like, you know, the peak where he's going to go into a downslide now is kind of crazy. And I think that he just messes Dricus up, like just destroys him. I don't see him getting challenged for a little while now.
I hate to say that I don't see it either, but I agree with you. I want Dricus to like F him up. I can't curse on here, but that's how passionate I am about my hate for Izzy. You know, but I just don't know if I see it either. I am hoping and praying. Andrew, any thoughts before we talk about the actual fight?
Yeah, so it pretty much, I agree with what Chris is saying. I don't think he's on the downslide at all. I think that he always has these weird moments in the media. And I think part of it is definitely due to what Chris was talking about, where he hasn't had a real good opponent in the past couple of years other than Alex Pereira. I mean, we always say it takes two to tango. And a lot of times that other guy just doesn't show up against Adesanya. So I think to see somebody that has both the technical prowess and that personal like vendetta against Adesanya, I think that just got him so pumped up when he saw that that was actually going to happen. So it makes more sense on what happened in the octagon, what actually ended up going down. But still, though, I don't love the way he went about it, to be honest.
Also, one more thing just on it. Like, I agree with that. But also, like, I feel like people try to be like, why isn't Izzy this Mr. Suave, like Muhammad Ali? Like, what? Like he's an Australian anime nerd. Like, what are we even talking about right now? Like,
okay, see, I just disagree with that. I do, because I'm not saying that. I like the, when they argue, you know, in the post fight, I like when they get dirty. I like when they say some crazy things. I like that energy. I think that's what keeps UFC entertaining. You know, it's the social aspect is what really gets the fans linked up and loving these guys and just involved. So I live for that. I don't want him to be some suave guy whatsoever, but I think it was just what he said that kind of shocked the world. And it made everyone like what's going on here?
Especially since it was so out of nowhere. I mean, these guys have gone back and forth about the whole who's the real African fighter type thing, but Adesanya just went in there guns blazing and
that King of Africa stuff that he was doing was like so wildly disrespectful to Izzy. Like, I feel like we can downplay that and then upplay what Izzy did, but if we're all going to be fair, we have to at least acknowledge in reality how disrespectful.
And then now
us three are criticizing a black man for using that word when the three of us, I don't think, should have any jurisdiction.
I think calling him that was not good for public TV, saying that.
But I think if Dricus was going to bring all the smoke talking about how much he's an African champion, I think he needs to like be a lot. I think that Izzy's like, oh, you want that? Okay, right here. And then
he is African.
Well, yeah, he was just like, you want this whole African champion, you know, sort of nonsense going on. You want to like, you know, play with me. You want to, you know, play with my emotions, maybe even. Okay, well, I'm going to get in your face right now. I'm going to yell
at the end of the day, the, like what skin color aside, he is African. you know, he's
of course, and Izzy's letting him know that, like, I'm that guy, like, not you. And I love that. And I'm so happy that Whitaker lost, just to track it back. Like, I just, him on the mat was the best.
You're just an Izzy fan, so we're never going to agree on this
time. Yeah, no, definitely not.
We'll never agree. But I mean, like, this is another thing. I feel like if anything, we could actually have a whole episode just debating on my hate for Izzy and your love for Izzy. But sadly, we don't have time for that.
Yeah, I think he breaks the title defense record in the next like year and a half in the division.
Yeah. Well, okay. These are some bold claims in this short episode we got here. So
Andrew's quiet. Andrew's super quiet. Honestly, thoughts, Andrew?
Remind me. You're going to have to remind me of this because I'm taking a note, because we're going to have to chop this up on an episode because I really need to get into this.
All right, sounds good.
But moving forward, let's talk about the actual fight, because aside from what happened in the ring after, this fight was crazy. I mean, like I said, I really saw Dracus winning this, but a second round TKO, Robert Whittaker, what is going on? I mean, I feel like UFC 290 really presented Robert Whittaker with like what was likely his last chance at scoring a potential rematch against Izzy for divisional supremacy. So I think this was just did not go. This was horrible for him. This was just, how does he come back from that? I mean, not only was he beaten, he was finished. And before UFC 290, Robert Whittaker hadn't lost to any 185 pounder besides the champion himself. So this was just honestly hard to see for Robert Whittaker. And it's just like, where does he go from here? Like, does he leave this division? Does he stay in this division? Like, what is up? Like, where do we go?
I mean, we can see him move back down to 170 where he started his career, but I wouldn't recommend that. I mean, we saw what happened when he fought, you know, Wonder Boy. That didn't turn out well. Yeah. And by far, his most successful stint in his entire career has been at middleweight. So going into this, I thought Robert was definitely going to get it. I was like, Riley, you're crazy listening to that episode last week. But wow, what an upset. I mean, I can't believe just how Dricus went out there and just was able to starch him just like that. Like, it wasn't like he wasn't the top, you know, contender or champion for the past, you know, four mm-hmm. years, however long I've been in the sport. So it was crazy to watch just, I guess, a kind of a turning of the guard moment here where we're finally seeing like that number one guy finally you know, take a step in his career. So I don't think it's over for him yet at middleweight. I think that he definitely can get a couple more fights if he wants to work his way back to the belt, but this was supposed to be like his point to like put an exclamation point on like his whole, you know, career in the past year, to get another title shot against Adesanya, make that trilogy fight and really press him. And at the last fight that he needed, the last turn, it just all fell apart for him.
Yeah, because I mean, like, Whittaker was doing okay on the feet at range, but it still wasn't like he was winning round two and just got hit with an unlucky shot. Like, he clearly wasn't. So I think this was just overall just a horrible performance for Whittaker. So, Chris, what was your takeaway with this fight?
Dricus fought him great. I mean, he had a great fight. I mean, Whittaker, I don't think necessarily, I mean, it's kind of said here, even in the notes, kind of talking about him in the championship picture. I never really saw that kind of for him or in his cards at this point in his career. I agree with Andrew. Maybe switching division might be kind of like a move that might be beneficial for him. But it's kind of almost an embodiment of the division and kind of the changing of the guard just generationally and era wise in this division. I mean, obviously at the top that don't change, you know, but at the championship, but everywhere else, it seems like it's almost kind of a changing of the guard. I feel like Whittaker was kind of the leader maybe of that kind of generation, maybe in this division. And it's kind of a changing of the guard a little bit. And it's interesting to see a guy like Dricus is very fun to watch. I'm not even super well-versed in Dricus. I haven't really been watching him for a super long amount of time. This was actually the first fight I'd seen of him live over the weekend. And it was super, super impressive to me. I'm not scared for Izzy's sake whatsoever, because, you know, he's a monster. But I think it's definitely fun for the division, and a division that hasn't had much excitement in it aside from the Pereira kind of era in a long time.
And I do. Oh, sorry, Riley.
No,
I do
want to
come in and just say one thing about Dricus. And like my joke always when I saw him, like, you know, debut in the UFC and work his way back up the middleweight rankings, was he is the best worst fighter of all time. He manages to win fights that he looks like he's not going to win. He looks terrible in the octagon, but despite that, he always gets the win. And that, honestly, I feel like is starting to fade a little bit after this Robert Whittaker fight, because in all of his previous fights, he looked very, very sloppy. His cardio wasn't all there, which was a big hit on him. He actually talked a lot about that in his post-fight interview. But off the back of that, though, he always had flashes of really good technical stuff, but in a total fight of just really bad, you know, just wish-wash, bad strikes, everything like that. So the him for him to finally put it all together in this Robert Whittaker fight, where he looked great on the ground, he was able to pass Robert Whittaker's guard multiple times, and also he was able to stun him on the feet. He just looked like he was quicker and had more power, and also was a little bit more clever in the striking exchanges. It just looked like he's finally putting it all together to the point where I don't think I can call him the best worst fighter of all time. So,
no, I 100% agree, because I feel like we've talked about this before previously. Maybe I'm wrong, or maybe we've talked about it with someone else, but how he is the best worst fighter. And I didn't see that. And I thought that wouldn't work in his favor versus Robert Whittaker. Like, you can't do that with Robert Whittaker. And we saw a different Duplessis this fight. And I mean, even just defensively, like the way he blocked all the head kicks Whittaker was trying to go for, I was just really impressed by that. The whole fight was very impressive to me, and I'm really excited to see him now go up against Izzy. I mean, it'll be exciting. Chris, I'm sure we'll be fighting it out that week whenever that happens.
I mean, he just won the contest for who gets to get punched in the temple by Izzy, so congratulations.
Yeah, that's going to be a great episode. I can already see it.
Well, moving forward, another crazy fight. I mean, this was just an insane fight. We have that Brandon Moreno fight. Both guys taken to the hospital after the bout. This was crazy. We had Judge Derek Cleary, and I don't even know how to say his name, so I don't want to botch it. But they gave Pantoja the victory at 48-47, and then Ben Cartlidge went for 49-46 in score of Moreno. It was a crazy fight, and there was a lot of debate on Twitter after if it was a robbery or not. Personally, I don't think it was. I was obviously pulling for Brandon Moreno, but for what I saw, I don't think he won the fight. So I wanted to ask you guys before we get into, you know, the logistics, do you think that this was a good win for Brandon Moreno? Or, I mean, if this was a good win for Alexander, or if it should have went to Brandon Moreno?
So personally, I guess I'll take this question first. I think that Moreno won the fight. To be quite honest, I've actually rewatched the fight, and I did rescore because I honestly was like so caught up in the night that I felt like I couldn't really score it accurately the first time I was watching it live. But after rewatching it, I felt like Moreno was able to get rounds 2, 3, and 4 just due to significant strikes and the amount they landed, volume. But off the back of that, though, it was such a close fight, and Pantoja was there at every corner of the fight, especially on the ground too, where he looked really, really great. So off the back of that, I just can't – I understand why the decision went to Pantoja. I definitely saw Moreno winning the fight just by, like, a hair of a margin. But Pantoja definitely was in that fight, and I feel like I can see how the judges gave him the knock.
Yeah, I mean, Moreno, according to UFC stats, does say that Moreno slightly outlanded him 167 to 161 in total strikes. But I think Pantoja really just did better work on the ground. However, he did take Moreno's back multiple times and racked up more than 8 minutes of control time. It was just a really, really close fight. So I think it really depends. Like, it could have went either way. If Moreno would have won the fight, I wouldn't have been shocked either. But for me personally, when I did go back and watch it, I was like, shoot, I do have Pantoja winning this. And I didn't want to see that. You know, I didn't want to see Brandon Moreno lose the title. You know, he's no longer the flyweight champion. So that was just crazy to see.
Yeah, and I will say, though, I think one of the biggest deciding factors in this fight, since it was so close everywhere, I feel like both guys had their moment on this, or moments in the stand-up. They both had their moments on the ground. I think the thing that really divided for the judges was possibly the damage done. Because at the end of the fight, Moreno's face did not look all that great. And while Pantoja was cut also, I feel like Moreno literally looked like a zombie. And I feel like that does play a lot into the judges, you know, just deciding each round, like, oh, that guy looks more hurt, I guess that guy won, the other guy won the round, you know?
Yeah.
So I can see. Yeah.
No, yeah, I was just going to also say, too, like, I completely agree with that, because I think when Pantoja dropped Moreno in that opening round, too, with that nasty left hook, I think that also left something in their mind, like, damn, like, this is how we're going to start this off. So I think that really resonated to me, because that's what resonated for me right when I saw the off rip. I'm like, uh-oh. And then, it ended up going, could have went either way, but that's what resonated in my mind. I think that they easily could have judged based off that as well. What about you, Chris? How do you feel?
I mean, obviously, with the belt involved, it's obviously hard to say this, but it feels like almost result wasn't necessarily the most strong factor here. You know, I mean, I talked about Brendan in last week's episode. I talked about how much of a fan I am, and I am, you know, the whole, you know, one day I will be champion, manifesting his success and everything like that. I'm a big fan of that and a big supporter of that. But kind of what I talked about, what I need to see in Brendan when talking about improvement, was kind of that heart, that grit, just a little bit more just nastiness mixed with just like just that will to never give up. And that's what I got. I mean, obviously, we kind of look at the fight and, you know, it was even scored 49-46 in Moreno's favor. And I feel like obviously Andrew said, you know, he rescored it when he watched it. I feel like this is one of those fights where you can just say either side won and there's not necessarily a wrong side. And I feel like Brendan kind of showed everything I needed him to show for what I thought would be a victory. And yeah, he might have not gotten it, but as a fan, I'm satisfied enough in seeing that what I wanted to see out of him ended up coming to fruition for sure. And, you know, obviously he's not coming away with a victory here, but I think he'll get another opportunity 100% just from how great he was in this performance for sure.
Oh, I mean, yeah, 100%. Even just the way he roared back in that second round, I think it was arguably one of the best jabs in MMA. That was just crazy to see. And it was just so close. So, and like you said, you know, I'm always rooting for Brandon Moreno. I really wanted him to win this fight. I think, did we all want him to win last week? I don't recall if we were all on the same page. I feel like we were all rooting for Brandon Moreno. So obviously it's not how I wanted to see this fight end. I, you know, would never want to see him lose the flyweight title, but it happened. And it was also fight of the night too. So at least it was a great fight for us to watch. Extremely exciting. We can't deny that. It was just kept us on our toes the whole time. So it is what it is. I'm rooting for Brandon Moreno. I don't think, you know, I think he's going to come back from this, obviously. And I think he's a great fighter. So, you know, like you said, Andrew, you even scored it the other way. So it's just a matter of
here. Yeah, and I think if anything, it sets up a trilogy fight really well. Because obviously, I mean, going into this fight, this was the second time that these guys were meeting against each other. They fought once a while back, a couple of years ago. And Pantoja now has won both of those fights. So I feel like Moreno definitely needs to get one or two more wins at the top of, you know, flyweight. Maybe a Brandon Royval could be a good fight, or maybe even a rematch against Kai Car France. But I think that he definitely wants that rematch again against Pantoja. And considering how big of a star he is, I mean, I think it's inevitable.
Yeah, I mean, we'll just see what happens, I guess. It's just, here we are. That's just how I feel. Like, that was my exact reaction after. I'm like, damn. This is where we are right now. I don't even know what to say anymore. But let's move on to someone who didn't lose their belt. We have the Volk fight, Yair Rodriguez. Volk with a round 3 TKO. Yair now falls to 15-4. I was expecting this. I was not shocked. I had Volk. I think we all collectively thought Volk was going. I know even Andrew texted me. He's like, are you're really counting out Yair that much? Like, yes, I was. And I'm happy I did, because like I've mentioned multiple times, these last couple weeks, I've been kind of in a slump. I was known for always getting fights right and Mahdi always getting them wrong. And then somehow the tables turned. And I don't know, I think it might have been my karma for bragging too much. So to see this win, I was very, very satisfied. And, you know, first I want to ask, what does Yair need to work on to come back from this? And what do we see for him in the future?
I think the main thing that he needs to work on most, I mean, obviously, is just takedown defense, which hasn't, it seemed like something that was, it seemed like a factor of his game that he shored up in recent fights, like Josh Emmett. Everyone looked like, oh, I guess he figured it out. But obviously, when you go up against one of the greatest fighters of all time in Volkanovski, I guess your grappling defense isn't so great if you're out here. But the main thing that I saw, though, is just I saw when he fought, when Yair fought Frankie Edgar a while back, who's now retired, funnily enough. But in that fight, it went very similar, where it just was kind of one-way traffic the entire fight. And Yair was really never able to get his foot in that fight and, like, work his way back. And the main thing that I just want to see him change, and what I feel like can make him a lot more competitive, is just, I guess, the greediness and heart that you see in most champions and pretty much all champions.
Yeah.
I feel like once Yair starts to lose a fight, unless if he gets something very, very flashy, like we saw in like the Korean Zombie fight, like the upward elbow or something like that, it's pretty much always he's just going to lose either on the ground due to submission or just getting, you know, ground and pound TKO'd, something like that. It's just he has to figure out how to gain the respect of the other guy when he's losing the fight and work mm-hmm. his way back in there and get his moments and win rounds.
Yeah, I mean, and also to harp on that takedown defense, because I think we could all agree that Volk really took him down and thoroughly dominated on the ground. That was a huge factor here. And I think also to say that Volk really, like, proved how great he is this fight. He adjusted. He did something he normally doesn't do. And he made those changes to fit the Yair Rodriguez fight. So I think that was really impressive to see. I mean, Chris, what was your takeaway with this fight?
Alexander Volkanovski, my second favorite UFC prime athlete. I think that this just kind of showed a level of dominance in Volkanovski, because Yair isn't, you know, no schlump, obviously. You know, we were kind of talking about how Yair can't really get downplayed here when we were talking about it last week. But I feel like Volkanovski is just showing just how at the top of his game he is right now. I mean, obviously, we're kind of talking rumors and things like that. And my favorite rumor is the Islam fight. I want to see that again. I want to see if he can finally top that mountain that seems just so impossible maybe a couple months ago. And I feel like this fight gives me more incentive to think he can actually do it. I don't necessarily know how correct I am, but I would love to see the fight. And I feel like the Islam fight makes the most sense now.
100%. I completely agree. That's what I had when we were going to get into that. I really want to see that fight. I've been waiting for that. And also to note that Volk is now tied with Makhachev atop the ESPN's men's pound for pound rankings. So I think that even seals further why we want to watch this fight and how exciting this would be. But also one thing I want to touch on is just because we kind of like got into this last week. I casually threw out there that Volk, you know, might be the GOAT. And I think that he could be. To me, I think he's the GOAT as of now. And, you know, now after this win, do we still think that, I mean, you were very clear you didn't think that Volk was the GOAT. Do you think that he obtained the GOAT status, or is he at least closer to that?
Well, John Jones is the GOAT, first of all. Like, he just is. But that it's just like, it's like Wayne Gretzky in hockey. Like, it's a formality. But I do feel like Volkanovski, when talking about kind of this niche, just maybe even in just the division, I think I like what you said there, right? Like, GOAT status, I can maybe pass the GOAT by itself.
Not GOAT by itself. GOAT status.
And we'll get to him later.
Okay, I promise you, I do not think that Volk is the greatest MMA fighter of all time. I promise that.
Yeah, GOAT level, I would totally agree. And I don't think necessarily he does anything to disprove that. I feel like everything that's put in front of him seems manageable enough. And obviously the Islam fight didn't necessarily go his way, but a win against him now, that maybe puts him in GOAT status for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that would put him in GOAT status. And I think right now, I mean, at least considering, I guess, featherweight GOATs, right now at the top of my list is probably Jose Aldo. But I think that's pretty quickly waning. I don't think Max Holloway's really in contention anymore, especially after mm-hmm. their whole trilogy. As sad as I am to say it, being a big Max Holloway fan. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that maybe another win at featherweight, maybe a defense against Ilia Topuria, that literally I think makes it undeniable that he is the featherweight GOAT at this point. Yeah. And overall GOAT, if he beats Islam in the next year or two, especially considering how close their first fight is, I mean, it's a hard thing to argue. It really, really is. I mean, especially considering how he has gone and literally just cleaned out the entire featherweight division. He's beat Jose Aldo. He's beat Max Holloway. And it's leading to him also fighting greats in lightweight that people at lightweight, even 10 pounds heavier, don't want to fight that guy. So I think he's definitely on the cusp of those conversations.
Hey, solid point. That I'm loving it. I mean, I love debating this with you guys. And I feel like we went tit for tat last week. I casually said it too. I wasn't even trying to start a debate in everyone's eyes.
Well, yeah, because it was more that, like, you said it like, what was it, 3 days before Jose was getting inducted into the Hall of Fame? And that's why I jumped immediately and I was like he's the go-to of the division. Like, Aldo's the go-to of the division.
I do like to stir the pot a little bit, I will say. I think anyone who's listening for pound knows that I intentionally like to stir the pot. Mahdi Dembele can really come on here and say, because I've intentionally tried to aggravate him multiple times. So it just comes natural at this point. It really does. So, you know, like we discussed, I'd love to see him go up against Islam. Volk is set to undergo a procedure on his elbow, but he does expect to be ready by his date of return at UFC 294. So I hope that, you know, we see that solid. I hope we see that booked and ready to go. Also, you know, just to wrap it up, In terms of Yair, I think another one that would be fun to see him go up against would be Arnold Allen. I don't know how you guys feel about that. Just to cap this off, I think it'd be exciting. I think it'd be a great matchup. I think they would be, they'd fit well together. I would be excited to see how that goes. And I just think that would be a way for Yair to pick back up. But moving forward, I do want to skip ahead since we were on the topic of GOAT status. We do have a UFC 295 fight card coming up. We have a Jon Jones fight, New York City in pound for pound's hometown, headlining at Madison Square Garden. I mean, many consider this fight as
Our
maybe.
building.
Yeah, that's our spot. Like, here we go. We got to get in here, guys. Yeah, Jon Jones versus Stipe. This is gonna be fun. Like, it's the two greatest fighters in the history of UFC's, two biggest weight classes. Two, arguably, I don't want to make those claims yet, but arguably. So I don't want to get into early fight predictions now because I think we're gonna need a full episode just for this one fight. But I will say, I think we could assume where we're all going with this. I think I can feel it out here, what we're all
Yeah,
thinking.
you can definitely read the writing on the wall.
Yeah,
But
I'm feeling the vibes in the room for sure.
yeah, off the back of that though, I'm so surprised this fight got scheduled because honestly, I was
Me
more
too.
expecting Jon Jones, Sergey Pavlovich at this point because I
That's what
felt
I
like,
wanted to see.
yeah, I felt like that was going to be a fun fight, but everyone wanted this one, and it just seemed like they weren't. I don't know what they weren't hitting, whether it
You
be
know
a,
I
I
love
guess,
Sergey.
yeah. Oh,
You
I
know.
know. We talked about it in one of the first episodes,
I know.
but.
It's like that.
Yeah, it just for some reason they couldn't figure it out, whether it was money reasons, I guess location. But I'm so glad that they actually finally figured it out. And even better, it's probably going to be the biggest event of the year. Every single year they go to Madison Square Garden around November, and it's always one of the biggest cards in the year. I mean, we've had Kamaru Usman fight, we have Rose Namajunas fight there, and now we have Jon Jones fighting here, which is amazing. I can't wait. And I'm not too sure. I might need to fact check this, but this might be one of, if not his first time fighting in New York City,
Oh,
which this
wow.
is his home state. So pretty cool.
Oh, then that's going to make things even more fun. What about you, Chris?
You said, Riley, this is going to be fun. Watching an old Croatian man get murdered isn't like fun for me necessarily, personally. Not like the most fun thing.
It seems fun to me. Y'all
Like just watching
are rocking
him.
with Jon Jones. I'd love to see it.
But I mean, it's not going to be on the level of what Francis is going to do to Tyson Fury,
Yes.
if I could dip my singular toe in that. But I do feel like this is just like putting Stipe in the octagon with this guy. They talk about what Chael Sonnen was feeling when he was going into the octagon with John, really feeling like a lamb to the slaughter. Like, I don't know how Stipe feels any other way aside from like, wow, I'm just walking to my murder right now.
Yeah,
I don't know
I
though,
think.
like,
No, you go
no,
first.
right. Yeah, all right, I guess I'll go first. I just knowing Stipe though, like his mindset, of just, I mean, like the guy's a firefighter. I feel like he could take on the world. At least that's what he thinks,
And John's a
honestly.
fire. He's literally a fire.
I'm just
Like
so excited to see Jon Jones fight. Like, I'm so
me too,
excited. Like,
of
and I
course.
think I like I said, I'm feeling
And
the
get
vibe of.
challenged maybe a little bit more than last time, where he got zero challenge maybe in the
Well, you
last
gotta
fight.
keep in mind it's hard to challenge Jon Jones. Look at the guy.
Especially heavyweight Jon Jones.
Yeah,
That
it's
is a
hard to
grown
challenge.
man.
It's very hard to challenge Jon Jones. Like Andrew said, I love Sergey. I would have loved to see that fight, Sergey up against Jon Jones. I'll settle for Stipe. I still think it's gonna be a great fight, whether it is a complete bloodbath or not. It's here in Madison Square Garden. So to see Jon Jones at Madison Square Garden is just exciting enough for me. I don't even care who he fights. He could fight my grandpa at that
I
point,
will
right?
say though, I want to highlight though that this really is a legacy fight though. I mean, this is one that is going to build up Jon Jones's, I guess, GOAT status if we're still going to be talking about that. Because Stipe Miocic, I mean, even though he's far removed, I feel like from his peak at heavyweight, at one time point, and I think still, he's considered the heavyweight GOAT, at least right now, for what he's done in the division and everything like that. So I think Jon Jones beating him, I mean, I think what he wants to do, I think what Jones is thinking going into this fight is that he wants to just get all the accolades that he can in MMA just before eventually hanging it up. So I could see this being one of his last fights, if not his last fight. So yeah, I can't wait to see it. I'm very, very excited.
Not to derail here, but just to make us feel old, I feel like we're really at that point in time where all of our favorite athletes are just at that retirement point, whether it's, UFC or the NBA. I've made it clear I'm a big basketball girl, and like we're at that point now. It's like LeBron James's time's ticking. He's going to be leaving soon. All these athletes that we grew up with, we had Tom Brady leave. We have all these big names, and it's like really starting to become the next chapter. So I don't even want to think about John Jones hanging it up soon. Like that hurts my heart. I'm not ready for it. It's all happening too fast. But this is just one of the many exciting fights we've been hearing about lately. And another one that was brought to my attention by Andrew Canary. I did not even know about this. I made the run through for the show, didn't even add it. And then I get a text from Andrew saying, yo, I think we need to talk about the Francis Ngannou versus Tyson Fury fight. This is now another extremely exciting fight. The announcement clarified that the fight will take place in a regulation boxing ring under boxing rules, including three ringside judges using the 10-point must system. What are your thoughts on this? I know we're all excited. Like, let's
I'm
just
so
cheer.
excited.
Joy.
I can't wait. I mean, like ever since I think it was like the end of Tyson Fury's last fight that Francis Ngannou came out into the ring and then they did the whole face off and said that they were going to fight each other. That was a couple of years ago at this point. I feel like it's been so long. And at this point, I felt like maybe like Ngannou versus Deontay Wilder might happen, but I always thought that Fury was just going to be untouchable. I thought he was going to maybe take another can fight, another big name fight, and then probably just retire. But now that he's actually taking a real test and a real challenge in Francis Ngannou, I'm so excited. And also, just additionally, I feel so happy that Ngannou's finally getting his payday, because with this whole fight, I'm not even sure where it's taking place. I actually do need to check that. But just with this whole, Tyson Fury fight comes a huge payday for him, which is something that I definitely needed leaving the UFC. And I know he just signed with PFL, and that's fantastic, especially with African development. But I feel like everything's starting to come together for Ngannou, and I can't wait for this fight, especially just considering how fun it is just from a fighting standpoint. It's such a stylistic, fun matchup.
Yeah, and I'm a huge boxing fan, so I'm excited to see that. And also, I mean, we really followed the whole Ngannou, leaving the UFC saga. Where was he going to go? Who was he going to sign with? And that was like a really big part of the show for weeks almost. So to see, the cards starting to really line up for Ngannou and, this big fight with the PFL while he's being represented by them, it's exciting. And I do want to add, though, it still remains unclear a lot of things in this fight. I mean, we don't know the number of rounds. We don't know whether Fury's, WBC heavyweight title will be on the line. And we also don't know whether this fight will even count towards their boxing records. But what we do know is that it's going to be a very exciting fight. And Chris, I know you want to chime in here, so let's hear it.
Yeah, first of all, by the way, what you just said, like if Francis Ngannou became the WBC heavyweight champion, that would be like the funniest thing of all,
That
like easily the funniest thing of all time. Like maybe the greatest champion in the history of the belt, like
That would be
entire
the
long
definition.
lineage, and just one
Yes.
punch from just Francis Ngannou and it's over. Because that's how
Over
well,
200
that's
years of lineage just for that. That would be
No, that would
incredible.
also be like the definition of like I got the last laugh. Like he
That's
just
what I
leaves the
mean.
UFC and
Yeah.
he's like, oh, here I am. Like
And
what?
Dana would love that too. But I feel like it's just so unlimitingly frustrating that we can't get Francis and John in an octagon and just hash out these two guys. It's the only guy anyone logically thinks can beat John. And it's just so frustrating to see fight announcements of him in boxing matches against Tyson Fury, because we've all been asking for that for like 2 years. That's like the thing we've all been asking for, we've been dying to see. And like, that's nobody. Nobody is dying to see this. Get him in a ring with John. Make it happen. It'd probably be the biggest super fight in the history of the heavyweight division in the UFC. It would be unreal. It'd be everything. It just every single fight announcement I see from Francis from now on just going to be more and more frustrating that we don't see the John fight. Obviously, the PFL, if maybe ESPN can join the two together because it has both of their rights, and maybe we could do some side of counter promotional thing. Just make it happen. Like, who cares? We'll do
And
it
I mean,
in Kimbo Slice's
we've
backyard. Like, who cares?
literally do it on YouTube for sake. Like, I
Yeah,
don't
I
even care.
mean, we've seen that also promotional, like, little I like them working together. We've seen Bellator work with Ryzen and put on like collaborative events where their champions fight their champions.
Yeah, and
So,
just one more thing on that too. I saw Izzy and John are cool again, which is great for the sport. Those two
I
are
did see
tight.
that.
That's awesome.
That
But
Anthony
also,
Pita.
Yeah, and also just tying back to Izzy, the way Riley talks about Izzy, that's how I feel about Tyson Fury in a ton of ways. I feel like Tyson Fury has done more than overstayed his welcome the last like year or so in the boxing scene. I feel like it was his time to ride off into the sunset after the last Deontay fight, but he doesn't know what else to do with his life besides fight, and he has nothing else. He doesn't know what else to do aside from train, make money, fight the guy, get the belt, party. He doesn't know what else to do aside from that. He thinks he might go back to his ways. At least that's what I've heard from in interviews. I'm not even necessarily making just guesses right now. This is just from what he was saying. But I do feel like this guy is just, from everything I see in the news, it's similar to Connor in that it's just like, I only see negative things. You know, no smoke without fire, as we say with Connor all the time. I feel the same way about Tyson. And it's just like, we need some reinvigoration in the heavyweight division in boxing. Obviously, yeah. I have an immense respect for Tyson. I think he's probably the best heavyweight of all time. I don't think he's beatable. I really don't think he is. And obviously with a guy like Francis with one punch, it's, you know, that's always an argument. Yeah. Obviously, you know, Logan Paul's signature move in WWE is called the one lucky punch because that was his whole thing with Floyd. He thought if he can get one lucky punch, he could beat him. So that's his name in WWE. Cool crossover there. Feel that way about Francis. One lucky punch. It could definitely happen, but I don't really see it. And it would be pretty wild to see him beat like maybe the greatest boxer of all time.
I know. I mean, I 100% agree with almost everything you said, which, like, it's very rare on the show when we always agree. So I love to note on this. But, you know, what you said with Conor McGregor, that's, like, it's exactly, like, you nailed it on the head because this is exactly how I feel. I cannot stand Conor McGregor. I hate his guts. I made that very clear last week. I make it clear almost every week, I think. Like, I cannot stand Conor McGregor. But more so, it's like his social personality has almost tainted his career. And I feel like we see that with Tyson Fury. And whether it is because of just the stupid stuff he goes and says, or the stupid stuff he does, or just stupid fights he takes now. And like, even just, you know, like his brother too, like you had the whole Tommy Fury, like Jake Paul, like it's just, it feels like it's almost like comical at this point. But although I do want to see him fight John Jones, Francis Ngannou, first and foremost, I still think this is going to be exciting for entertainment purposes. At least we have something here.
Yeah, no, I think that'll it'll definitely be a fun fight at the end of the day. And I will say, I mean, for both of you guys thinking that, you know, it's kind of time for Tyson Fury to hang it up and he should have retired maybe a year or two ago, which honestly, I don't fully disagree with. I think that probably would have been a good time for him. I think now he has a great moment to go out on. I think this is like the best outcome for him. He could have fought, you know, like maybe 2-3 more cans after this and just kind of fell into obscurity as some boxers do, even despite being champions. Mm-hmm. Now he has a big crossover fight with people that, you know, care about Ngannou, care about Fury. What's going to happen? And I think this could be the perfect moment for him to just come up with a big win and maybe just hang it up and be done.
What's that Batman quote? It's like you either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain. Like that's like what we're seeing here. So like just go out as a hero because you're already starting to become the villain and just close it out. Like it's time.
If you publicly verbally harass True Jordy online, you're immediately going to go through just like the worst storm of like publicity. It literally like Tyson Fury started going at True Jordy online and just immediately he started getting that negative press run that he was like relapsing and all that. And then the Conor stuff happens and like he immediately goes to Miami and like all that happens. So just don't leave True Jordy alone, please.
Okay. Now, you know, to change subjects and move forward, one last topic, which I'm not really excited to talk about it, but I think we have to before we wrap here. We have the Holm versus Bueno Silva fight this weekend. It is headlining, which that's a huge debate. Like, should this really even be like the main fight of the night?
No, that's stupid.
I'm not really excited about this. I mean, I just feel like we have to talk about it because it is the main fight this weekend. Give like just maybe a general prediction. It's pretty hard for me because I'm still going Holmes. Holly Holm, I really just think that, she's 41, so it's kind of, I'm not so confident with her, but, you know, she's still been the favorite lately to capture, you know, Nunez's vacated belt. The odds are in her favor. I don't know if Silva can match her blow for blow in a striking battle. And, you know, also we gotta, you know, give her flowers. Holm is one of the finest kickboxers in UFC bantamweight division, you know, history. So I think that's going to work to her advantage. And really against grapplers like Myra, she does a great job of turning, you know, her foes' takedown attempts into clinch battles. So I'm going Holm. Like I said, not really excited. I do think I don't know. I just don't even have anything exciting to say. I'm trying to act like I care, but I'm just like, all right, it's fine. It was a little disappointing to see that this was that main fight this weekend. So
I think I'm a bit more excited than you, Riley, which it seems like you are in like despair over there over this fight, which like I'm a little bit excited about this fight. But to be honest, the thing that I think is most exciting is the context that is surrounding this matchup, which is Amanda Nunes is retired. That bantamweight belt is completely vacant. And obviously, I think Juliana Pena is going to be on one side of that eventual title fight. But I think that one other side is still completely open. So I think whoever wins this fight is definitely in serious contention for it. So I think that definitely adds some really interesting implications to this fight. But off the back of that, though, I am so tired of people saying that Holly Holm is like still an exciting and great fighter. Mm-hmm. It's like she had one fantastic fight against Ronda Rousey and a couple highlights throughout her career. And I don't want to deny that she's a fantastic fighter at times, but she's 41 years old. And every single time I see her fight on one of these kind of like off cards, you know, coming out of a big UFC numbered event, it's always boring and it's always filled just with just nothingness. I don't know. I'm just like, I get fed up with it from time to time with Holly Holm. So going off of that, I think Bueno Silva's definitely got this. I'm excited to see what the new gun can do. And I think Holly Holm's time is it's coming to an end here in the UFC.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Chris?
I feel like, you know, just we can end it right here. Just kind of on a note that we've been kind of pushing forward this entire podcast, talking about kind of changing of the guard and generation and era. And, you know, you feel it almost the most in the women's division. Obviously, Amanda was such a presence at the top that it felt like when she's gone, it almost was a domino effect. And, you know, Holly created the greatest moment in female mixed martial arts. It's undeniable. It's the greatest moment in female mixed martial arts, not even interdivision, in female mixed martial arts in general. It was the biggest hype train in female mixed martial arts, probably a top five hype train in all of MMA history, including men with Ronda Rousey, that got stopped like this with a kick from Holly. It was just such a beautiful and poetic moment that obviously, you know, she's going to get put on to, you know, close out events. It had a moment, the moment like that has such longevity, especially with, you know, how she performed after that too. I mean, she's been kind of a model of inconsistency after that from a certain angle, if you look at it, but I do feel like, you know, with that moment creating such noise, especially if we talked about Ronda maybe coming back last episode.
I was going to say that.
Like, this Holly kind of situation kind of makes sense, especially maybe if this is one of her last fights. Maybe that's the angle they're looking at here. I'm honestly just trying to dig to see why this is headlining an
event.
That's
the only thing I was going to say about that before we closed out, because I really thought the timing is just like too coincidental here. We did talk a lot about these rumors of Ronda returning, and now we have this. I just think, you know, here's the
octagon
thing.
Octagon visit, an octagon visit after a win, Riley, is that in the cards?
I mean,
you think Ronda will be there?
I would like to see
it. What are your odds? Give me a percentage on if Ronda will be at the Holly fight.
Ooh.
Good question.
We should bet on this. Don't get
I'm giving it like a right now.
What's the money 46? Line on this? Is there a money line on this? Like
Ronda's presence is like plus 800.
Here's the thing though. Like, although I think that would be crazy, especially because that's something like that, you know, Saga is something we grew up on. Like that was a big thing when we were growing up as UFC fans, and anyone who's a UFC fan in that time period could say that. Like that was a monumental period for women's fighting. But in the same breath, it's like, I'm kind of over it. Like, I don't know if I'd want to see Ronda even pop up in the octagon. Like, I'm like, really? We're doing this again? Like,
Amanda did 6 years of work to make you feel that exact way.
I'm like, I don't know. It doesn't really excite me. I feel like lately, now that Amanda Nunes especially is gone, like, I don't know who's going to excite me in the women's division lately. I mean, like, she really carried the women's division. She was, like, she's the GOAT. Like, she was the greatest of all time. And she still is, obviously. But I just don't know. I'm waiting for something to really spark my interest because it hasn't in a minute. And I don't know if it's going to be. I mean, obviously, if Ronda Rousey does show up in the octagon, like, has a little octagon visit this weekend, I mean, I will freak out still because it's just wild. But I don't know if I...
Kicks her in the head. Imagine. That'd be crazy.
Oh, my God. I mean, Twitter would love that. I really don't like Ronda Rousey. So I would be excited, but I'd be more excited to see her get like knocked out later on down the line. But, you know, I think we could leave it there. at this point, I think we covered all bases this episode. We did a recap. We talked Holly Holm, we talked all these exciting fights. We'll have more for you next week on Pound for Pound. I'm joined here by Andrew Crenary and Chris Carino, my co-host. Also, our amazing producer, Colin Loughran, is with us here. And a shout out to Bobby Chaffardini